Okay, well, welcome once again to the Legion of Reason. This is episode 240 for Sunday, September 16th, 2018, which, by the way, happens to fall on Rhonda's and my 12th anniversary. And getting on to real important things.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, well, thank you. The past few years have...
Rhonda, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we've just been having some wine today. The past few years have been rough for the weed killer glyphosate, the active ingredient in the popular herbicide Roundup. First, there was that Cerellini paper, which, although later retracted by the journal it was published in, after the authors refused to do so at their request, claimed that it was carcinogenic in rats, even though those rats tend to get tumors anyway. Over their lifetimes. The WHO's International Agency for Cancer Research reclassified the herbicide as a probable carcinogen, I'm using scare quotes now, in 2015, over which there has been more controversy. Last month, a California state court awarded a whopping $289 million U.S. to Dwayne Johnson, who claimed his terminal case of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, I really got to shorten my sentences, was caused by this herbicide. And this past week, a report commissioned by the group called Ecological Defense Canada, wherein traces of glyphosate were found in a number of food products, appeared on the national news program aired on a major Canadian network. I'm not going to name CTV at all here. In episode 240, this, I already said that, didn't I? this is why I really got to edit these things a little more. I'm just going to read this as it's written. I'm not going to try and make things up. In episode 240 of the Legion of Reason podcast, Vancouver Island University professor Robert Wager joins us in exploring the claims and the evidence in the glyphosate manufacturing. So welcome, I'm going to move into the, this is the Skype. Yeah, welcome to the podcast, Rob.
Thank you for having me.
That was awkward.
I thought I saw Twyla trying to join.
So did she try? I'll try and get her in. Sorry. And yeah, no problem. I'll do that. Poor Twyla's knocking on the door and going, let me in. And okay, here we go. This might take some doing because I have to, I'll see how it goes. Anyway, so how are you doing, Robert? It's
fine. How are you?
Cold. It's cold here. This is garbage weather we're getting. I don't know.
You weren't this afternoon. We had a major thunderstorm, knocked out power, and I almost had to go to work to do this interview.
Wow.
Oh, wow. That's kind of odd, a thunderstorm on Vancouver Island, isn't it?
Yeah. Very much so.
I mean, you get these general rains that last for days. For us, it's, thunderstorms, kind of par for the course. I mean, it's this tornado country for Canada. I mean, that's, we're in second place, Canada, in the race for how many tornadoes we get per annum, but we're way behind the United States on that. I think we should start with the history of glyphosate and the beginnings of the controversy surrounding glyphosate and safety issues.
Well, glyphosate was invented in the early 1970s, actually, and it didn't really come to prominence until the development of genetically engineered crops, where the crops were specifically engineered to be resistant to this particular herbicide. It's a really amazing compound, actually. It's very effective at killing a very wide or broad spectrum of weeds, but it's also rather non-toxic to anything that's not a weed. So it doesn't persist in the soil. It breaks down into non-toxic components. It's actually a rather useful agricultural compound.
I just muted my mic. That was like, everybody's going, hey, well, there's no sound. Okay. Blame it on the wine. The mechanism of action of glyphosate, I mean, it kills weeds, so why doesn't it kill human cells? I mean, but
well, because it actually targets a particular enzyme that's responsible for making a subgroup of amino acids that are used to make proteins. Now, we don't make those particular group of amino acids the same way that plants do. So we don't have the enzyme target that glyphosate actually attacks. So for us, the glyphosate, and for all animals for that matter, is virtually non-toxic unless you take huge amounts of it.
Yeah, which is true for pretty much anything, including water. I mean, people forget
that. Water will kill you.
Yeah, water will kill you. Hyperhydration is a real thing, and people have died from it. I mean, if you dilute electrolytes, which are required for neural transmission, to the point where they no longer can perform their function, you can have a heart attack. I mean, calcium is definitely one which is necessary in sufficient concentrations for heart function. Sodium, same thing.
Too much water will kill you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it's not nothing to do with drowning either. It's just physiology. And it's now the most commonly used herbicide in North America. Both the United States and Canada use it quite a bit, especially after the advent of genetically modified crops, which are resistant to Roundup use. And so where did this controversy start?
Well, it probably started at the beginning of the development of genetically engineered crops, I prefer to call them, as virtually all life on Earth is genetically modified. Genetically engineered refers to a specific engineering or specific change made, and that's what these crops have had done to them. That happened in the development was in the late 80s, and then by 1995-96, the first GM crops or GE crops came on the market. And with that came a great deal of fear and apprehension by certain groups. And of course, because those early GE crops were herbicide tolerant so you could use glyphosate, the people also started their campaigns against that particular compound.
Is this just a fear born of the idea that this is a compound which is created in industrial chemistry, in factories, basically, or is there something else that started this?
The argument of exactly how it started, you'll hear different versions from different people. There's definitely a component of big corporations being involved in the food supply, and you can sort of understand that because Europe's had some significant health issues over the past couple decades where food had some problems. So part of it is not being in favor of corporations having too much say in our food supply, and part of it is the idea that there's something called chemical-free food.
Oops, sorry, my bad. Go ahead. There we go. I'm trying to get some. Okay, there we go. Never mind. Keep going.
Everything in life is a chemical reaction.
Mm-hmm.
We're walking, talking bags of biochemical reactions. There's no such thing as chemical-free food.
But it
makes great advertising, and it mm-hmm. gets a lot of people very upset.
You know, one of the things that I've seen a lot of is, well, if you can't pronounce it, we don't sell it. And I'm like, well, okay, a banana, name that chemically using IUPAC system of naming compounds, and we'd be here till the cows came home.
Indeed. Yes, it's everything is made up of chemicals.
Yeah.
We talked earlier about water. Well, you could also call that dihydrogen monoxide. And there was a famous meme that went out a few years ago where there was a call to ban dihydrogen monoxide. And it listed all these things that this compound could do. And people were quick to sign off on that until they realized they were actually talking about water.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen that one. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's a lack of, it's a kind of a scientific illiteracy in that, you know, people don't understand that chemicals, I mean, all normal matter is chemicals. I mean, if it isn't chemicals, it's dark matter or dark energy, which we don't know what are yet. I mean, it's not that they're black or something. We simply don't know what they are. And there's this disconnect between the lay understanding of, I don't know, natural is good, which is a logical fallacy in and of itself, and this idea that, you know, it's the appeal to nature is a big problem, that people don't realize that, you know, foxglove is very natural, but I wouldn't go eating one. I mean, it would cause
the last thing you did.
Yeah, exactly. It would cardiac arrest, like, dang. But the other thing is also dosage. If the active ingredient in foxglove is taken moderately, it can treat certain cardiac conditions. People do not understand, A, the source of a chemical doesn't matter. It's what it does biochemically. And two, the dose matters, you know.
Absolutely. Toxicology 101. The dose makes the poison.
Exactly. I'm just going to bring Twyla in here. She's now here. Let me bring her into the conversation. She's very, very, how shall we say,
outspoken.
Passionate on this one.
Yeah.
Oh, there she is. She's gone in. Okay, I'm going to grab her. She's coming in on us on a different Skype handle, which makes things. Okay.
So, Randy, who told you that the sound was not working? Because I'm monitoring Facebook and YouTube.
The sound should be working.
Hi.
Yeah, but who said that to you?
And yeah, it looks like it's working to me. I don't have a problem here.
Hi.
There we are. Now we're going. Good. Okay. I'm not touching this anymore. Oh, except for this. I gotta kill that. There we go. Yeah, now I'm not touching anymore. Okay. So there's a distrust. A lot of this has to do with, I don't know, it's kind of fed by Hollywood too, where you have corporations as evil monsters that that push chemicals on people to. We see this in big pharma as well, right? It's this distrust of the chemical industry. And what do you do about that?
Twyla had something to say on this?
My thing here is I'm angry at the organic food industry for fear-mongering, because that seems to be where all that anti-GMO stuff is coming from. And of course, people like Mercola and the so-called Health Ranger and things like that, they've been very successful. But how is it that the organic industry and conventional food industry can get away with mutation breeding, which isn't even tested? They use radiation or chemicals. And this is something anyone can look up. But yet now people have fallen so hard for the anti-GMO campaign that they won't even acknowledge that this happens. And in fact, proponents of the organic industry are like, oh, no, we don't actually use mutation breeding. But it's a common thing. Genetics, the ignorance about genetics, period, and chemicals, as you guys were already talking about, genes change. They mutate constantly, whether we cause it, whether nature, it happens all the time. That's natural. Genes change. This is completely natural. It's unnatural for them not to. So this campaign that has completely miseducated everyone is the most frustrating thing for me. So how do you even begin? Like, I was online, and I love that you're on that genetic GMO answers. But who listens to us? Who listens to you? How do you even begin to fight that misinformation campaign that everybody, most people, have fallen for it? And even places like Kitalia have now put their non-GMO label on there. And I have to boycott them because they've absolutely bought into this misinformation campaign and now just feeds into the ignorance of everyone. Plus now this court case, have we brought that up yet? So yeah, I'm
absolutely frustrated
at this whole thing. And now that's going to just add another layer.
No, we haven't talked about the court case per
we're,
se.
Yeah, it, we're it, getting there. It is a,
we will get there. I'm sure we'll get there. The idea that the public is misinformed about agriculture. Well, unfortunately, they're misinformed about many aspects of society. But what's different with this particular situation is that we have multi-decade, multi-national.
Oh, sorry, you're kind of cutting out there, Rob. A little closer. Yeah, closer to Mike's good.
Okay, so in the case of GM crops, we have a multinational, multi-billion-dollar, multi-decade fear campaign designed to misinform the public and, by just happenstance, sell products that are alternatives. Advertising works. And when you spend billions of dollars and you flood every media form, you're going to get results. And unfortunately, they have gotten results. The good side of it is that media has figured out this now, and they're starting to give both sides and a much more critical view of those types of advertising campaigns. Even the CTV one that came out this week about the Environmental Defense Canada, they were sure and some very good information along with the fear story. So at least now we're getting both sides of it being told to the public, and they're not just being fed and expect to swallow it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, I'm a little bit cynical. I'm downright cynical of the CTV story because, I don't think this is a non-story to me. So giving both sides to a non-story is kind of dubious in terms of, you know, giving kudos to that. I mean, really, this is, we're going to get to the story in a bit, but I mean, we're talking measurements in processed foods of parts per billion when the minimum or the maximum allowable intake per day is in the parts per million, which is, three orders of magnitude. I think it kind of gives a false balance in that it gives the Environmental Defense Canada a platform when they're talking nonsense.
It's Environmental Defense Canada. I'm sorry. They're not scientists. Who are these people? Why are they even a mouthpiece for this at all?
It's a good question.
There's a lot of money floating around in it, and they certainly get their grants from organizations that have an agenda that includes vilifying anything to do with GE crop technology.
Yeah.
That, and they put Canada in there and make it sound like a federal agency. It's not. So for reporters to give these guys a platform too is absolutely frustrating, and they do it all the time.
Yeah. The DPRK has the word democratic in it, but I don't think North Korea is very democratic. They can call themselves whatever they want, right? Who they are is a completely different matter. We're going to get to the lawsuit in a bit, but we're going to get to the lawsuit before we get to the recent CTV piece on residual or trace amounts of glyphosate on foods. But we, even before that, we have to get to the International Agency for Cancer Research changing the designation of glyphosate from a non-carcinogenic product to
something that might cause cancer. It's basically literally what the designation means. It's a they say probable carcinogen. What was behind that?
Well, that was a very you can't know without being in the room when they did it, but it looks from appearances on the outside, it was a well-orchestrated multi-year campaign designed to get exactly that result, that they could claim that glyphosate causes cancer. It began long before the Monograph 112 was produced, and it carried right through that. And it carries on today, where people who were involved in the direct production of that monograph are now expert witnesses at trials claiming that glyphosate causes cancer.
Yeah, and certainly when we come to the CTV piece, they're using that as evidence that, yes, it indeed causes cancer. But that's not at all what the IARC has said. You know, they're overreaching it.
IARC doesn't analyze risk. IARC analyzes hazards. Now, the difference between a hazard and a risk could be easily looked at. If you're standing on the shore and you see a shark fin 20 feet offshore, that's a hazard. If you jump in the water with that shark fin, that's a risk. The exposure must be taken into consideration for any hazard before it becomes a risk. IARC never looks at that. But people don't understand the difference between a hazard and a risk. There's a hazard every day for every one of us, but is there a real risk if we drive carefully? No. The hazards of driving in a vehicle are minimal.
Yeah.
Well, that, and we absolutely know if you look at toxicity levels, coffee's far more toxic.
Table salt.
Oh, yeah. Table salt has a bigger LD50.
Every day,
yeah.
At quantity.
Or lesser.
What is it? Billions of times higher in their toxicity level in coffee, and they don't blink an eye. Yeah, glyphosate.
I interrupt with a question?
Or, sure.
Sorry, a comment from a YouTube viewer. Nico Da Vinci says, it's untrue. Porte did not work on the monograph.
Of course he did.
who's
maybe
missing?
Maybe we'll have time for a online
sure
call
when we open the phone lines, you can call
do some Q&A. Thank you for your feedback, Nico.
I don't know what to say to that, except that of course he did. He was very well, he was right in the center of it. He was the invited statistician expert to come in and deal with that very issue. So I'm not sure where she got her information from, but it's not accurate.
There we go. I just pulled up the... He still claims that he did not. But anyway. So we got through the IARC's decision to make. There was actually some controversy about what they included in their analysis and what they left out.
Well, there's a great deal of controversy about every aspect of Monograph 112. At the beginning, you have Aaron Blair, who was one of the members, one of the senior people, who came from the National Cancer Institute, who he himself knew of the largest study in the history, where they looked at almost 90,000 people who had direct applications with glyphosate and their families, and tracked them over a very long period of time. And the conclusion of that huge study was that there was no association of glyphosate and any form of cancer. He knew about that 2 years before Monograph 112, and he was in charge of this particular area. He did not bring that information to them. And under testimony, he was very clear. If they had seen that information, it would have very likely changed their consideration.
Yeah.
Well, it goes on further. There's other problems where the final draft of Monograph 112 had a whole series of statements from papers, from cited research papers. But when the monograph came out, the conclusions of at least 10 of those papers were changed to favor glyphosate as a carcinogen compared to what the actual citation said.
Wow.
Can we talk about how much you have to eat for it to be, well, it's
still we'll get to that. We're going to get to that later because there's some great sound bites on the CTV thing that's going to talk about that and put it in a perspective that is, you know, this is basically much ado about nothing. I mean, it's a tempest in a teapot and that's not even, that's overstating it understating it very much so. And there's also the Seralini paper, which was, I know Twyla this is a trigger for her.
Seralini is like enemy number one to me. It's beyond my imagination why anyone would even ever listen to him after the unethical practices that he's.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There's so much bad science in that paper.
Seralini, I like to just bring a little bit of common sense to the Seralini thing. In the original publication, before it was retracted, Table 1 had male rats where the control rats had died at three times the rate as the rats fed the highest level of glyphosate.
So glyphosate is a life saver.
You have to ask yourself
if this is a good study.
Prove that glyphosate prevents death?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Data would
you
say
would not that. Come to that conclusion, but there's obviously something wrong with their controls.
I think it's Table 6 now in his republished pay-per-view journal. It was Table 1, but I think it's now Table 6. The rats he used were specifically generated to spontaneously produce tumors, and they did that wonderfully. They produced tumors all over the place. The idea that glyphosate had anything to do with it was soundly discredited from around the world by many, many organizations. Of course, Seralini is a bit of a star in the anti-GMO world, as he was the first to blow the whistle. Well, actually, I guess the first would have been Pootsie in Scotland when he said that the GM potatoes caused rats to die. But rats can eat potatoes.
What would be the mechanism? This is the thing I don't understand.
Unless, of course, we talk about Senefs.
We're definitely going to talk about Senef because she makes a claim for which I can find zero papers on. Just absolutely wild claim. But we'll get to that. IARC is pretty much the only organization which has made a, I don't know if you can call it a statement or what, on glyphosate as being a carcinogen. And it's not really that much of a statement. I mean, it probably is, but hey, whatever. It's not definitive, and certainly the evidence does not point to that, does it?
No, the evidence definitely does not. You look at decades, and we're talking 3 and 4 decades worth of research. Hundreds, if not thousands, of papers have looked at this data, and they all come to the same conclusion, that glyphosate does not represent a risk or the potential to cause carcinogenic. It is not teratogenic. It does not cause birth defects. It is not mutagenic. It does not cause changes in the DNA. And its toxicity levels are below that of table salt. It breaks down into non-toxic compounds in the soil in very rapid time. It does not bioaccumulate. It does not absorb well into animals at all. In fact, we pee it out as fast as we take it in.
Well, yeah, because it's water soluble. Yeah. It's extremely soluble.
Yes, it is.
12 grams per liter. That's huge.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean anything to a layperson. That's just like,
yeah, exactly. That's the thing. That's the disconnect between reality and perception. In a scientifically, I'm not going to say illiterate, but people need to have an understanding of what toxicology is about. It's about mechanism of action, dose, response. That's actually kind of it, isn't it?
Well,
is there
anything
else?
Don't even know what mechanism of action is. They yeah. don't even know. You have to be able to describe. Actually, you don't even know what cancer is. I had a teacher.
Cancer is many things.
Well, she's like, what is cancer? Cancer is changes to the DNA, right? It's you're no. Skin cell no longer acts like a skin cell. It's the DNA has to change before the cell becomes cancerous. And she didn't even know that. She's arguing with me, and then she gets a medical dictionary out and it says that, right? People don't even know A, how and how. It the mechanism of action is how it changes that DNA to right. make the cell
that
cancer.
That can be caused by environmental factors. It can be caused by your own historical contingency in terms of genetics. It could be lots of factors that go into that. Exposure yeah. to certain chemicals.
And when you both have already, especially Rob here, has described why it doesn't cause cancer.
Yeah, well, no one's gonna is saying go out and go to your local bar and order a shot of Roundup. I mean, it's just, let's just be sensible. I mean, when you're handling chemicals.
And it still won't cause cancer. It'll kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll kill you in other ways, right? It's not going to kill you via cancer. I mean, you're going to die long before any tumors develop.
And they can't cause tumors.
Yeah. And, you know, people have murdered children using less table salt. You know,
sure, you can do that.
Literally. I was watching, I have a very, my wife is very much into forensic files, so we see these things, interesting ways of killing people. One of them was table salt.
And 3/4 of a cup of table salt will kill an adult.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it doesn't take that much. The LD50 is lower than it is for Roundup. And
salt doesn't cause cancer.
And this ain't golf, so... The higher, the better.
Yes. You want a very high LD50 when you're talking about toxicity.
Yeah. And so, Kate, the Seralini paper had a lot of, you know, they never published any pictures of rats that were controls in their original paper.
Which one is well, the tumors?
They looked exactly like the rats that had the big tumors because
yeah, exactly.
they too had big tumors.
So there was no real, you know, I guess they wanted to save on the publication cost.
It must have been, yes.
They wanted to be, yeah, okay.
Sure, you do pay for pictures, so it does matter. So if they're the same, hey, what's the point? What's the
we
point?
Are getting comments.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to go to the chat. All right.
Yeah. Nico Da Vinci has a question referring to the AHS study, but first a rant from a listener on Facebook. Thanks, trying to figure out if this is pro-GM or anti. Oh, so GMO scientists say that GMO foods is good. Like Ford saying, Ford is the best. Or perhaps a small amount of poison glyphosate is good to eat.
No, that's not what we're saying. That's not
none
what we're saying at all.
GMO, yeah. None of us has a stake in the GMO industry. Not one
exactly.
single one.
Yeah.
Message to Cammie Ryan. Not. Where's my check?
Well, yeah. I said please call no. in on our toll free number.
I call
but,
that slander.
Well, I'll
so
put that up
you.
In a bit. Yeah.
Okay. Liz. Okay. So
GMOs are not
got,
harmful. There's
Nico
no
saying,
evidence. There's no evidence of harm. None. Not a shred.
In the Monsanto papers, document number 45, there's an email from John Aquavella, Monsanto, to Donna Farmer.
Oh, here we go. Professor. Out of context emails. Great.
Okay.
WikiLeaks.
No
WikiLeaks.
Nonsense.
Yeah,
WikiLeaks.
And please phone in.
When we put up the phone number, we're not going to do that yet. But we will.
No. Yeah.
Bring the evidence.
Yeah.
You can't wait. There's an email.
And we're talking about objective empirical evidence as if I shouldn't have to qualify this. That's what evidence is. Okay. It's objective. It's the same for everybody. And it's empirical. Something that's measured. I don't want to hear an email. I don't care. I really don't care. Where's the evidence? That's where what's important here. It's
you're
interesting.
You're going to slander me and call me a GMO, like have some kind of stake in GMO, bring it. I'm actually just a mother, a person that goes into her job every day. I don't have any stake in the GMO industry at all whatsoever. I don't have.
It's risk versus benefit. That's always the consideration. With GMOs, I've yet to see any risk. There's just none. There's just none.
Bring the chemistry, bring the science, bring the evidence. Yeah. We've already taken down all of this.
I want to hear emails. That's rumor.
If you're not listening, if you can't ask us why, when when Rob already explained why.
We'll give them a chance. We'll give them a chance to state their case on the phone. But we gotta
carry on with our interview.
Yeah, we're gonna keep on going. if there's a benefit, and there is a benefit, what is the benefit for genetically modified crops with relationship to glyphosate?
Probably the biggest benefits are in the environmental impact issues. You got to remember that it's very true that glyphosate is one of the most widely used herbicides. The reason it is the most widely used is because it's the most effective with the least impact in the environment. And it has replaced a great many other herbicides that were used prior to that that did not have that. They were far harsher, these other compounds. And some of them persisted and some of them were more toxic. And so using glyphosate, not only have we reduced or eliminated the use of a lot of these other compounds, but we've also replaced it with something that doesn't persist in the environment, is completely breaks down into completely non-toxic components. And the biggest, probably one of the biggest things that it has allowed farmers to do is something called no-till agriculture. No-till agriculture allows the farmers to not tear up the soil every year to deal with weeds. When you tear up the soil, you greatly enhance the potential for soil erosion, both for wind and water. As well, when you don't till up the soil and you use herbicides to kill the weeds, the organic matter in the soil continues to build from the stubble of the previous crops that are planted within the stubble of the previous crop before that. It's a very beneficial thing for soil structure to do no-till agriculture. And herbicide-tolerant crops, and because the vast majority of herbicide-tolerant crops are actually Roundup-resistant or glyphosate-resistant, it has allowed for tremendous benefits, both in less energy production, less CO2 production, because you're not plowing the fields, and greater carbon sequestering within the soil and better soil structure.
Yeah. And so you're using fewer chemicals, which are hazardous to the environment. And this is the benefit in this case. I mean, there's other crops for which there's, you know, it's case by case basis, which being genetically modified provide other benefits as well. And Nino also says that this is a claim, and I'd like to see the actual evidence. Quit making a claim. Quit doing this. Give me the evidence or silence. Okay. A Monsanto employee expects cancer cases have quadrupled or more due to glyphosate. Or is that maybe it's just Monsanto in general. Really? Supply your empirical objective evidence, please. Or stop commenting. Because
I add the organic industry is also misled on the type of, you know, pesticides they use? And yes, they do use pesticides. They just call them all natural. When you compare the toxicity of something like, say, uses copper or nicotine and such to glyphosate, and for them to even say they don't use pesticides, that is absolute nonsense. They do.
Yeah.
They just don't use synthetic ones.
Rotarone is a pesticide that is used in organic farming practices, and it is a teratogen.
It's nasty.
It's very nasty.
It's being phased out. It's being phased out because it is actually rather nasty. Well, I think only certain jurisdictions continue to allow it to be
organic
used now, which is a good thing. We're getting that particular nasty compound out of the marketplace.
Yeah, that's only used in the organic industry. It's long since stopped being used in what they call traditional farming practices because it's really dangerous.
But it's not synthetic.
Yeah. But people have this idea that organic means, oh, well, it's all natural. Well, who cares if it's all natural? What I care about is what it is that what it does. I mean, we already covered the foxglove example. That's an appeal to nature, and that's a bad thing. It's not just a logical fallacy, but it can kill you if you commit it. And it's there's lots of logical fallacies in the whole thing. Like GMOs, you know, there was a time when the smallpox vaccine, when they used cowpox as the agent for boosting the immune system against smallpox, that people thought it would turn them to cows. Have we really advanced any farther than that? And I'm not so sure.
People have always been afraid of what they don't understand. It goes back as far as human history goes back. We make up stories to deal with things that we do not understand, whether it be things in the night sky or things we see around us. There are all kinds of stories made up because we simply don't understand. And that's where science is so beneficial to societies around the world. We don't die at 30 anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, because science and technology have brought forward better medicine, better sanitation, better food, better water, all of these things. Now we live to the ripe old age of 80 or 90. And it's true that if you look at the basic rate of cancer 50 years ago, it would have been lower. But that's because we died of other things beforehand. Cancer is, the vast majority of cancer is a disease of the aged. When cells get old, as we get older, our cells start to lose the ability to fix the constant mutations that happen every day in every one of us. Yep. Eventually, some of those mutations take hold and often develop cancer. So cancer very much is a disease of the aged. As the population ages, we start to see more cases of cancer. But if you look to the National Cancer Institute, you will see when they adjust for age, cancer rates are not going up. They are going down in the vast majority of them. There's still a little bit of an uptick on lung cancer with females. Mm-hmm. Particularly, they haven't quite caught on about smoking yet, but it looks like it's about to start coming down now. But the vast majority of cancers are actually decreasing in rate. And that's a wonderful thing as well. The science and technology has allowed us to have much better methods of treating cancer once it's actually diagnosed. And what's really fascinating, and the world really hasn't seen the tip of this iceberg yet, is the genetic or gene editing technologies, which will very soon make traditional GMOs obsolete. When we start using those, we will be able to take individual cells from a person, modify them, and put them back and eliminate cancers. This is truly personalized medicine at a genetic level, and that's what's coming in the future.
But yeah, it's unnatural, so there's still going to be people complaining about it.
Or you're playing God. There we go.
Yeah.
Some people
are like, okay.
Anybody who wants to talk about GMOs, when you call in and you want to call Monsanto out, explain to me why it's okay for mutation breeding thousands of changes at once in organic. However, these specific tweaks made for GMOs after, why is it okay to mutate food but not make specific tweaks? Why is it okay to not test the organic food that you got from mutation breeding, but you have to test the GMO? Why is it okay that organic food is not tested?
Yeah.
Tell me that.
Well, I'd like to know how making a change in the DNA, I mean, DNA, if you ingest it, doesn't really survive very well in stomach acids.
DNA all day long.
Yeah. You know, we played a game. I was coming back from Edmonton on Friday, and we played a game. Name foods that have no DNA. And it's like, oh my gosh, how many are there? Okay, there's salt, processed sugar, and that's about where I started running out. Water.
Highly refined oils.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, highly refined oils. Then you're starting to run out of.
You really are starting to run out because, you know, refined foods maybe, but not always. Yeah, I had a tough time doing it. It was, and you know, 80% of Americans. It was a kind of a what do they call it? Bullshit esque. Thing where they had people saying, do you think that foods containing DNA should be labeled as such? And it's like, you know, that's pretty ubiquitous. It's everything's, you know, if it came from an organic source, is pretty much got guaranteed to be DNA inside it.
And somebody put up a website about DNA-free food. DNA-free tomatoes.
Oh my God.
Would you buy this? And so many people were like, yes.
Good job. Congratulations.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I one of my favorites is, of course, if you go back in the history of the anti-GMO movement, their favorite icon is the fish genes in a tomato. So the fishy tomato. And so there are many, many people have been very afraid by this. And so I ask people often,
why would you be afraid of that?
When you eat fish, do you become a fish? No, they say. When you eat a tomato, do you become a tomato? Well, of course not. So when you eat a fish dish with tomato sauce on it, do you become a fishy tomato?
Yeah.
No.
Well, that's exactly why I brought up the smallpox thing, because this is the same kind of logic. And I don't know. I don't understand this. What you know? Yes, GMO foods are tested anyway, but what could the mechanism possibly be to cause harm? I just don't get it.
Well, particularly since don't we share 50% of our genes with plants too?
Yeah.
I mean, people don't understand how life came to be through the ages and that genes are simply make up everything. And what made up life in the first place we are connected to. So we share DNA with pretty much everything on the planet. So eating it is not going to mutate you in any way.
Yeah, DNA just doesn't survive stomach acids. I just don't get it. But you get
people
who are very...
I think some people would object to it being supposedly an animal product, right? Like people that are vegetarians.
Okay,
yeah,
if
right?
It's a philosophical thing, I get it.
Yeah.
But we share 50% of our DNA with a banana.
Yeah, so if you're eating bananas, exactly. You're, you guys, this logic here that you're avoiding certain things that were alive.
I don't mean to make light of people who have issues with eating animals, and I seriously don't. That's a personal choice. But there's simply nothing in the worries that eating animal DNA versus plant DNA is any different. It's simply DNA.
Yeah. DNA like salt is salt. If you're not going to eat animals because you don't like the farming practices and all that,
yeah,
that's fine. But just know there's plenty of pollution when it comes to, you know, farming organic food.
Oh, it's less sustainable.
Organic apples, I mean,
organic and non-organic. Is less sustainable.
So, like, if you're going to take out... if you're going to weigh your risks and harms on what you're eating, I wish I didn't have to eat live animals. But then people object to synthetic meat. You're taking all my options away. Give me the synthetic meat. Fine. I would rather do that. But
have you tried the new burger from A&W? Have you tried that new burger? The
I don't eat an A&W because they advertise all this hormone-free. Well, I'm sorry, but all
sick, sick cows
yeah,
and
it's, yeah, false. I cannot eat there. I'm sorry.
But no, okay. They say, well, would you believe that this burger was made in a plant? And I'm thinking, like a meatpacking plant. But no, it's a no. It's actually it's a scary. It's a damn good burger. This it's actually really good. So anybody who's a vegetarian who wants to have a good burger, go to A&W, get that I can't remember what they call it. It's a meats. It's not their regular meatless vegetarian anyway. Burger, but it's meatless. And it's damn good. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, the Impossible. Is that? Yeah, some of that. It's actually scarily good.
Do they advertise that as hormone free too?
That would be a mistake. That'd be false advertising.
Well, it is anyways.
Hormone and antibiotic free. Well, it would be antibiotic free probably.
Well, so it's all
antibiotic free. I'm sorry, there's no even traces of
antibiotic. They don't inject the plant individually with an antibiotic. That's probably what they mean. A lot of plants have antibiotics as defense mechanisms. You know, same with antifungal and other things. But it's this idea again. It comes back to the appeal to nature, that natural is better. They don't realize that organisms have antifungal and antibacterial and antiviral compounds, which.
If you don't use the pesticides on the plant, they make their own in higher quantities that are more toxic for you. It just makes sense. I mean, they need to survive.
It's like the source of a compound, right? The source of a compound seems to matter to people, whereas there is some value in terms of fiber, when you're eating fruit. But okay, sugar. Let's just take a look at sugar. It comes from cane sugar, or if it's synthesized in the laboratory, does it differ in caloric value? No. But people think it does.
People are like, oh, sea salt. I'm like, you want salt with contaminants in it? And that's better because it's more are you kidding me?
Himalayan salt has no GMO. It's not a GMO. Himalayan salt.
And they slap not. There's no... Oh.
Anyway, we're getting let's move on. Yeah. Okay, so now
I have to share something though.
Okay,
I'm sorry. Remember, I posted, it was probably a couple 3 years ago, and I posted this gift pack I got maybe from like Superstore or something like that. If you spend X amount in groceries, and it had toothpaste that said fat free and non GMO.
Can you imagine?
I'll post it on the page later.
Brushing your teeth with uncooked duck fat.
Yeah.
Come on, I fat free. Oh my!
Yeah.
I mean, you can label
something
that's
like that,
true, but who cares?
Yeah,
it's no different than the other guy's toothpaste, right? Oh, well, marketing.
We were also talking about like advertising and that kind of thing, right? And
it's a marketing thing.
Yeah, Robert brought up the point of that, and how it can be like, I thought about it's not a false claim. It's just so utterly stupid that it's meaningless.
Yeah, it's irrelevant. Right? It's an irrelevant
kernels.
Claim.
A bag of popcorn kernels had the no gluten label on it.
Popcorn when things are already gluten.
There was no salt in it either. It was just plain old popcorn seeds with the label gluten free. I'm like, no kidding.
Anyway,
is that like false advertising, or is it just it's obviously
not
misleading.
False? It's just irrelevant.
And then people wonder if there's gluten in other popcorn.
That's the thing. Just asking questions.
Flavoring or something. It was just popcorn seeds. Hmm.
The federal authorities, both in Canada and the U.S., are starting to take a hard look at the level of advertising in food these days and how it is misleading in many cases. The non-GMO water. Free range water. I was
free range water.
Just so I would have the bottle.
That was a joke, right? Come on, that had to be a joke.
I think the federal authorities, both in Canada and the U.S., are now starting to take a hard look at this. And I think you're going to see a little bit of curtailing of some of these outlandish claims because the federal authorities simply won't tolerate it anymore.
Yeah,
and that's a good thing because it's clear that a lot of these claims are doing nothing but generating fear, and that fear is used to sell their product, and that's not what advertising is supposed to be.
Or it's taking advantage of gullibility. There is an argument to be made for caveat emptor, right? I mean, buyer beware. Yeah, I remember this thing. It was a little dish looking thing. It was just plastic, but it's basically taking the place of coat hangers for TV and antenna reception, right? And you don't pay anything for cable because you're not hooked up to cable. Or, it's like, well, duh, these are just basically rabbit ears with a little plastic dish on there to make it look like it's satellite. It sticks out of my memory back in the 80s or something. The 80s were a time of tumultuous time of this kind of thing. But it was, there's caveat emptor. I mean, anybody with any knowledge of TV is, kind of like, oh, you've got to be kidding me, right? But there were people who bought this thing, and one of them was my aunt's mother. it's just, to us, it's ridiculous, but people can be fooled by this kind of thing. And I kind of got a bit of a, people have a responsibility in society to be technically competent, at least to a certain level. And you can't legislate away stupid. I wish
but
we could.
You can give millions of dollars to stupid now.
Yeah, the answer is to educate.
Absolutely.
And I don't believe that government is here to micromanage people. So this is my not necessarily libertarian bent, but I just believe that legislation cannot cover all the bases. There's just too many of them. I mean, there's thousands of bases. So the idea is to educate people and get people to not buy into the food babe. And we can talk to her about her later. But I do want to continue on with the recent trial, the tort trial in California with Dwayne Johnson, not the ex-wrestler's turned actor. Actually, he was also an ex-Calgary Stampeder, but hey. He was. Played for 1 year, or some of the year anyway. It was a while back. And before he went into the World Wrestling, I'm not sure which one. I don't keep track of that. I don't watch it. thank goodness. Anyway, so the trial in California, where this whopping decision against Monsanto, $289 million, for somebody who was dying of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. What would you like to tell the jurors on this? Because we don't do science in a courtroom.
That's very true. And unfortunately, particularly in the U.S., it's a very litigious society.
Oh, it's extremely litigious.
Somebody got $10 million because they spilled hot coffee on themselves. The system, the tort law down there, allows for these type of feel-good jury awardings, where you're giving it to the little guy, you're sticking it to the man. And often, more times than not, these very high awards are overturned at the next level in the court system. And I think you're going to see very likely that this one, when it goes to the next appeals court or something along those lines, is that a lot of the award and even the verdict itself may very well be overturned.
But will that be as spoken about as this? That will be ignored.
Well, that's true. Yeah, everybody hears this first one, yeah. But more to the point, how did we get here? How did that happen? What? I mean, the science is not there.
I told you it was a very orchestrated series of events that began a long time ago in Europe, and it culminated in that jury decision a few weeks ago. So this is not happenstance that it happened. This was a very well choreographed series of events, including the what appeared to be a startling conclusion by IARC. And then once the IARC decision was out, everybody who had any issues whatsoever with GE crop technology immediately began beating the bushes to try and profit from it.
And this is one instance of that.
That's kind of opening the floodgates.
Are we going to see more now then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there's hundreds of lawsuits.
Probably thousands lined up. Yeah.
But whether they will actually come to trial or not, I suspect will depend on how far this particular court case goes in the judicial system and if it is either upheld or overturned. If it's upheld, then you're going to see hundreds, if not thousands. But if it's overturned, judges are going to be very reluctant to hear cases like that in the future.
And does the science ever get in, like these experts they have? Are they ever actual experts that can speak to why this can't cause cancer?
Oh, absolutely. There, if you read the transcript, you see lots of expert opinion on both sides. And then, of course, when you have your experts, regardless of which side you're on, presenting their evidence, then the opposing counsel then has the opportunity to cross-examine. The problem is you can't teach toxicology and physiology and advanced science to the layperson in a courtroom. You simply can't do it. So what are they left with? They're left with, well, it might have happened, or no, it didn't. And it's doing science by legal explorations is simply not science.
No.
And this is a perfect example of it. I think the case before this was talcum powder causing cancer. Johnson was successfully sued by somebody, and again, it was a multi-million dollar award, and I suppose that one will very likely be overturned. What's important when you look at the science of these things is every regulatory agency in the world that is charged with food safety or health that has looked at glyphosate has come to the same non-carcinogenic conclusion. Only one came to a different opinion. And now just having that is allowed them to open the floodgates with all kinds of advertising and legal challenges to legitimate science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
that's crazy.
There's also that false balance that's given where you can always find somebody who's dissenting, even if there is a consensus in the scientific community. And, you know, it's the same thing. It's just the same tactic that people who are climate change deniers, that, you know, they bring their pet dissenter who has a PhD in something. And we'll get to that in a bit too, because with Senef, it presents a false balance that they're not totally, the scientific community is not totally convinced, but when in fact there really is a consensus.
Yeah. Science by consensus, just the whole concept is a bit disturbing to scientists, because the consensus was that Einstein was wrong by everyone sure. said he was wrong until he was proven right.
Yeah. Well, that.
And so the overwhelming opinion on a given subject, I don't like the word consensus, may very well be a certain place until such times as new evidence says that that's not correct.
Right.
And then hopefully people who look at evidence and follow evidence will then change their way of thinking about that given issue.
Yeah. And most of the time, people that know how to interpret evidence and understand chemistry and understand biology and understand why this is now evidence and why it now is common consensus before that. But again, the layperson is going to be, well, I already have people at work saying that they'll never use baby powder ever again. So it's too late once the bad news is out there, and the people
nobody
that bring
up
these lawsuits and stuff, they know that. They know that, that now they can sell these people something else because they've already scared the pants off of them.
Yeah, fear sells. Absolutely.
Speaking of fear sells, we're going to, here we go. Now we're going to get into the recent piece by CTV News on this, you're finding trace amounts of these compounds in processed foods like Cheerios. Everybody loves Cheerios. I'm going to start actually playing some pieces here. This is Mohamed Malas from the Environmental Defense Environmental Defense Canada. Yeah, I think that's what it is. Here he is talking about, this is the group that commissioned this assay. Here we go.
The evidence on glyphosate for the past couple of years has been building up. We know that glyphosate has been linked to cancer by an international agency that is associated with the World Health Organization. And currently, there are thousands of lawsuits happening in the U.S. about potential risks and impacts that are associated with exposure to glyphosate.
And I'm going to play the second one just to continues on, really.
So cumulatively, we are seeing that children are potentially being exposed to levels that could be concerning. And that's something that we really take seriously, and I think Health Canada needs to take seriously as well.
I love the insinuation that Health Canada isn't serious.
They're easy to vilify by these people, though.
A couple of the words, I just wrote down exactly what it says. We know that it's linked.
Yes.
What's
I caught that
mean?
Too.
Linked doesn't mean
associated.
It doesn't mean it's associated with. All it means is somebody somewhere has put two different things together. The other one is levels that could be concerning. Concerning to who? The people who are selling the fear? Or health regulators in the country who have no concerns about it?
Yeah, apparently they have no concerns at all. It's like
they do not
ever.
Yeah.
They're so careless.
They're just in their cushy government jobs and oy vey. It's like Health Canada. Who will think of the children? Certainly not Health Canada. I mean, like, give me a break. Now the next little bit is by Stephanie Seneff, and she makes. You listen to the this is even more important to listen to the language in this piece, and not just the claims. The claims are outrageous already, but let's just listen to the language.
I hate her.
I've learned to do that too.
The United States and Canada use significantly more glyphosate per person in the population than almost any other country in the world. And these two countries also have a lot of health issues that I think are connected to exposure to glyphosate. I believe that glyphosate has an insidious cumulative mechanism of toxicity that involves incorporating into proteins by mistake in place of the amino acid glycine. And I think this is how it's getting into all the tissue. We're being exposed from many different directions, and we're accumulating it in our tissues.
No!
Listen to the language there.
I believe.
It's all it is.
That's exactly what struck me too, yeah.
Not a shred of evidence supports any of this, including especially the claim that glyphosate substitutes for glycine in protein synthesis. That's garbage.
Yeah, the whole molecule.
I could not find a single paper on that.
Really? That's like saying salt's going to replace water somehow. It's somehow water binds with. Yeah. Like, it's so mind-bogglingly ridiculous if you have any clue about chemistry.
But she's not trained in that. She's trained in artificial intelligence, computer programming.
She's not even anywhere near qualified to comment on this. Neither of those two people are. So, yeah. But, this is where the thing is. I would normally laud the television network for actually saying, okay, we're giving both sides and going to an expert. The thing is, this should never have been never got to CTV at all. But, you know, okay, we're going to play Len Ritter talking about
this. That's like claiming a dog can be Godzilla because this guy said so. So we're going to give this balance to the guy saying the dog turned into Godzilla. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah. Here we go.
The levels that they're reporting are in parts per billion, whereas the levels that are set by Health Canada and levels set by governments around the world, as well as the World Health Organization, the levels are typically reported in parts per million. There's a thousand-fold difference between those two right there. And Health Canada sets their limits based on parts per million. So, you know, again, I don't want to repeat myself too often, but the levels that they're reporting are extremely low.
And I'll just play the
very,
next one.
Very widely reviewed, both before the IARC took it on and since IARC took it on. And in every case without exception, these third-party, neutral, unbiased regulatory agencies have concluded that it's absolutely safe for use and that it does not pose a cancer risk or, for that matter, any risk at all.
And that never made it into the actual CTV piece on the news. That last bit.
Really?
It is. IARC is the only agency which has said that, okay, maybe glyphosate causes cancer. But
out of hundreds and thousands?
Yeah,
hundreds
out of
thousands.
All the ones in the world, IARC is the only one. But that's the one they concentrate on.
Whatever. IARC has an interesting way of evaluating things. Many in the scientific community take issue with their... I guess a good way to put it is IARC has looked at over 900 different compounds, and in 900-plus compounds, hold one, they've come with a carcinogenic declaration. So there was only one compound they've ever looked at that did not cause cancer, in their opinion.
Wow, that's a context issue.
To start looking at how they evaluate compounds.
That's something that's not mentioned in any of these reports. It's interesting. All right.
Well, may I ask, what was that what does the acronym stand for?
And,
International Agency for Cancer Research, or research in cancer. Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess my second question was going to be who funded them, but it's probably
that's WHO. That's the World Health Organization.
Not big pharma or big industry or whatever, right? Yeah,
It's World Health Organization.
And I do. We fund them because we fund.
We pay into the WHO.
But that may change soon.
The bias,
Twyla, a little while ago, you were mentioning that the context in terms of the dosage, right? Of glyphosate.
And I got this from, I don't have it up right now, but I have the context of it.
Yeah, I'll play the piece. Because this is Cam Dahl.
Okay, and I've got Rod Dubé who did the math.
Residues of one part per billion. Which is 1 second in 32 years, if people want to know what a part per billion is. You would have to eat about 36,000 full loaves of bread in a single day to get to the allowable daily limit of glyphosate. So these are very, very small numbers. This is just one international regulatory agency that has recently reviewed glyphosate. That includes the European Bureau of Chemical Safety, that includes the European Food Safety Authority, that includes the Environmental Protection Service in the U.S. Australian agency has also recently completed a review of glyphosate. We do have a significant independent regulatory review of this product.
All right. So that was Comdahl of Cereals. Oh, I can't remember what the organization he represents.
Cereals.
Yeah.
What was that again?
Cereals Canada, I believe, is what it's
called. Yeah, I think that's what it is, yeah.
Things that I can make a point right here, because it's really interesting. He said that you would have to eat 36,000 loaves of bread a day to get to the maximum level. What he didn't say in there, that maximum level is 100 times below the level that they can find no effect.
Right.
So, not 36,000. Not 360,000.
3.6 million.
3,600,000 loaves of bread, and you still haven't found an effect.
And someone else, like this Rob Dubé, put it in this perspective about eating the actual cereal. Rob Dubé did the math, assuming a constant hourly rate of cereal eating, 100% bioavailability and instantaneous oral absorption, which doesn't even happen. But it is impossible to reach the safety threshold if you are eating less than 2,252 servings of cereal per hour. And you have to do that continuously
every day
for 42 hours. And you will have eaten 95,833 servings of cereal in those many hours to finally reach that toxicity level that would be at all concerning and still doesn't cause cancer.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the immediate toxic effects, not longitudinal effects. You'd be dead from rupturing your
blowing up
long before. You know, it's
long
crazy.
Before you get there,
put some context. And if you look at the actual, I'm going to put the stuff up here. Unfortunately, you guys can't see this, but I've got the report up here, and it's all in parts per billion. Now they look like large numbers, like 231. That looks like a large number, but then it's parts per billion. It's like way down there. I mean, Fontaine Sante. I have no idea what that must be a brand. Roasted garlic hummus. 760 parts per billion. You know, some of the other things, like, where was the Cheerios? 577 parts per billion. Okay. You know, this is way below what Health Canada has set for the maximum allowable intake per day. That's per day. We're not talking about lifetime. We're talking about a day. And remember, glyphosate is water soluble, so you just excrete it. It's gone.
So you'd have to hold your pee in the whole time.
Well, even then. Yeah, you'd have bladder problems. I think it would be more serious. Ritz crackers. Oh, my God. No, not Ritz crackers. 569 parts per billion.
So, again, that's how many thousands of bowls of or servings
of
Ritz in, like, 40 hours that you would have to get to that parts per billion.
Oh, my God, not like Kraft dinner. Oh, God, I was a staple. You know, going to university, that's a staple for all students. Fruit Loops.
Raw men.
Raw, yes.
Well, they talk about the marshmallows, so.
Yeah. I know there was some.
They will?
Oh, that's Lucky Charms, isn't it? Oh,
yeah. They got. Okay.
Well, there were nothing but marshmallows.
Oreo cookie, the original, 19 parts per billion, which is like.
That's
tough. What's the error in measurement on these things? They don't give you that. I mean, there's no error.
They should be forced to put it parts per million, so there's a 0.0000 in front of it.
Well, that's the thing.
That's very misleading.
It's a small number.
In terms of, like, I'm obviously no chemist or, you know, anything like that, but I study rhetoric. But, you know, everybody knows PPM is parts per million, even me, even though that's not part of my professional realm or whatever.
Well,
right?
Some things actually act at the parts per million level.
What does that mean, you know?
Hydrogen sulfide is very toxic at the parts per million level. But, you know, it depends, right? It depends on where you observe toxic effects in reality. And that can be dependent upon the species that you're using as a surrogate measure for human toxicity. I think the toxic levels appear at 10,000 milligrams per kilogram in mice, but in rats it's something like 7,000, I want to say. 7,000 milligrams?
5,000.
5,000? Yeah, something like that. And it depends on species of rat. or species of animal that you're using as a surrogate measure for human. Because you don't want to give, I mean, as much as we'd like to do that to somebody like Doug Ford or something, you know, we can't use humans like that. or Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Mind you, Donald Trump, I don't know, he's probably got a lot of resistance to things that are toxic, but I don't know. Who knows?
Because he, in and of itself, is the toxicity.
Yeah. Well, yeah. His own soup of toxicity.
I get way too much dose of that.
So I am going to open up the phone lines now. So you can phone in. The phone banner is out. And if you phone in, please turn your feed down because there is a delay between what we're doing here and what you hear over the feed. So the phone number is toll free 1-587-288-1067. And you can give us a shout and have your say. But please bring evidence if you're being contrary.
No conspiracy theories.
Yeah. Yeah.
And assertions if nobody calls in, I've got welcome. A few comments that I can read out. There's quite a robust discussion going on the YouTube page.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. And I don't know if Paul Enns is, you know, Palogia.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or a podcaster, yeah, you know. Paul, yeah. He was listening. I don't know if he's still online, but I said call in. But if he doesn't
now you call can call in,
Paul. We'll ask his question.
It's up. Cool. We can shift the discussion to GMO for now, because I mean we've seen this. Well, no, actually before I do that, I want to have our guest have his say on this study. Our study. I can't call it a study. I got to call it a report. That's it.
There's two of them actually. They came very close together. There was the Environmental Working Group one that came out of the US. And that was, what would they call that one? It's a Roundup in your breakfast. And then...
I just sprayed on a little bit.
The latest one was the Environmental Defense Canada, which was for lunch. So I'm actually just anxiously waiting who's going to do Roundup for dinner. I'm sure somebody's got that report in the works.
Unreal.
Got to cover three meals a day, so it's important that we make sure we... scare the big
missing one
of the population on it.
And I'll say again, Environmental Defense Canada is not a single scientist with them, but
the issue is that we're not promoting glyphosate. We're not promoting Roundup. We're not promoting these things. What we're doing is we're saying that the risk is, it's as one person said, and somebody who actually is an expert in it, the name escapes me. This is almost the ideal herbicide because of its low toxicity and its effectiveness. And in fact, it actually promotes ecological farming practices. That's the thing. We're not promoting GMOs. We're not promoting Roundup. We're just saying the risk is incredibly low. For
being overblown by these other groups.
Oh, yeah.
Why we have to...
Oh. That's
defend
right.
science.
That's here. Right. I want to play what Bayer had to say. I mean, there's a statement by Bayer. Who actually...
In a statement, Bayer Crop Sciences, the makers of Roundup, write, Environmental Defense Canada and other activist groups are fear-mongering. This is yet another example of a publicity campaign that will no doubt cause some people to worry for no reason at all.
I agree with the sentiment, but I'm not sure this is helpful. Because you know how people react to statements like this, right?
Of course, I'm going to say that. They make it.
Totally agree with the sentiment. There's no question of that. It's just people are going to be defensive about this. I don't know.
Yeah, and because you played that, I'm expecting my check from Bear.
Yeah.
Because I'm a shill.
Cammy, if you're listening.
We are now shills.
You know, it's spelled T-Y-S-O-N, okay?
Yeah.
And I want...
Yeah, it's clearly public relations type language, right?
Yeah. Yeah, in terms of genetically modified, how actually is that done, genetically modifying a crop? It's not CRISPR, is it?
We are using CRISPR now.
Okay.
To do like the new Arctic apples that are coming out will be done using CRISPR. some of the new potatoes that are coming out that are fungal resistant and non-browning. I mean, that's a wonderful product. If we can eliminate the use of fungicides in potato production, everybody should be on board on that.
Yeah, that, the blight, that's the thing. This, potatoes are so susceptible to the blight, which is a fungal thing.
And the browning, haven't they proved that the browning, if, like some of the chemicals that come out of the browning are carcinogenic, so they're actually making a non-carcinogenic potato?
I think you're thinking of French fries.
Isn't that good?
I'm not aware of that myself.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of French fries. Okay, because you get amides that are
form
generated
when you fry it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
but I thought there was some toxicity with the browning too, so I'll have to look at that again.
Yeah, I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, who doesn't? It's kind of frivolous in a way. I mean, the whole apple thing, it's a bit frivolous that it won't brown if you slice it. I don't know. To me, that's kind of novelty. It's great if you have a party and it's going to sit out for a few hours, but.
Yeah. But moms like to cut up apples and put it in their kids' lunches, and the kid will eat them more if they're cut up than if they're on the core or something. You know, we're just spoiling children, but.
Well, aesthetically speaking, that's, too, it's nice to have.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, that's more of the whole thing I complain about, children being wrapped in bubble wrap and not allowing them to fail. I mean, now they can't even have browned apple slices. Come on. Oh, hey.
I have a question.
Hey, here, somebody showed up. Oh, and he's...
Oh, cool. Okay.
Somebody showed up. Ah!
Oh,
poor little hammy.
Talking about somebody calling in on the toll-free line. Oh, yeah. I have a question.
Anyway.
So it seems to me that in the 80s, there was obviously a food crisis that we obviously haven't, you know, resolved. But did not these technologies, were they not attempts to address food shortages in other areas of around the globe.
You're talking
too,
about
right?
The seed
by making more resistant. Yeah,
the seed repository. That's a bit different.
Okay.
The one in Norway, the seed repository that is there to, you know, as kind of the vault, the seed vault in Norway. It's a really cool place, and I mean that in two different senses. One, it's damn cold, and two, it actually is interesting because. It doesn't matter from what part of the world they are. Like North Korea has seeds that are deposited in that vault, and it's there to safeguard against the destruction of crops. Like if we if crops are wiped out, and there has recently been a couple of withdrawals from it. It is very useful. It's in Norway and it's bloody cold.
Well, I didn't know that.
Really,
but
neat place.
My question is more like, were not some of those technologies developed to, you know, endure harsher growing conditions and stuff like that, so that we can help third world country?
Right.
I'm wondering what the history behind
water,
some of the stuff is.
Well, there was the golden rice.
Well, with climate
the
change,
rice
it's going to be big.
With the vitamin A.
Right. The vitamin A rice.
Yeah.
That was a big
one. Sorry, guys.
Traditional breeding was very successful when combined with modern pest management techniques. We called it the Green Revolution. One of the biggest traits at the genetic level was making dwarf crops. So instead of a wheat being 4 feet high, it was 2 feet high. Mm-hmm. And same for rice. And so you didn't get lodging or the crop falling over and then spoiling on the ground before you could harvest it.
Right.
So that greatly increased the amount of crops that were grown. The combination of synthetic fertilizers, better pest management techniques, more irrigation, all of those things allowed us to triple the amount of food. And so we did alleviate, to a large extent, global mass starvation that was projected to happen. It didn't happen. It happened in local environments, but usually those were more due to socioeconomic and political problems in the local environments.
Somalia.
Get access to these modern breeding techniques and the products of that. So,
or at least to transport those products in, you know, that's an issue too, hey?
Well, it's hard to import into North Korea.
Well, yeah,
or export.
Yeah. But I mean, we get so many amazing fruits and vegetables from all over the place here. And it's, I think it's an issue not it's only of that, but factors, distribution though. As well, right?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's always going to be problems. We live in a global environment now, and if your goal is to have people being subsistence existence on the one or two crops that exist and grow in their local environment, well, it happens already. Most of the world is starting to have a much more varied diet, and that contributes to better health, mm-hmm. better pregnancies, better fetal development, and better health of the young children during development years, where the brain tissue is so sensitive during the early years that when you give them proper nutrition, yes. and couple that with better medical treatment and vaccines and clean water, they grow up to be far healthier individuals with much better prospects than by those who are stuck in subsistence farming, living off one or two basic crops and nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a diversified diet, or even saving the cassava and the papaya.
Yeah,
not all areas of the world also had very nutrition valued grains. I mean, if you read Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel, the reason that Europeans were more technologically advanced had a lot to do with the crops that they had, as opposed to, say, the South Americans and other areas that didn't have these more nutrition filled grains.
Everybody's got it now. Vitamin A.
It's access is for everyone now.
I found that Browning apple thing. It had to do with the EU, so I don't know how realistic it is. They said it's not the chemical itself, according to the EU. It's a byproduct of DPA that occurs when it breaks down, called nitrosamines. It has long been known that nitrosamines are carcinogenic. So it has banned the import of any apples containing DPA over 0.1 parts per million. So if the apples don't brown, this doesn't happen. How does that sound realistic?
Yeah, but the EU has a big problem with GMOs to begin with.
Unfortunately. Well, they're very proprietary. These GMOs, they know grow better. They want their own products.
Well, that's like Saskatoon berries. You know what Saskatoon berries are, right? I mean, they're like little blueberries, and in a pie, they're damn tasty. But Scotland will not allow Saskatoon berry pies because they haven't been tested. And I'm like, wow. Yeah, they have. I eat a lot of Saskatoon berry pie. I know damn well that I grew up on Saskatoon berry pies. I mean, it was in the fall. Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, yum.
Yeah.
Screw blueberries. Give me Saskatoons. It's a lot of
Would
these
you
things
like me to
are
read?
Trade. Oh, just a second. I just want to say that a lot of these things are politics more than anything else. Like, and in retaliation, by the way, Saskatchewan didn't allow McEwen beer, so you couldn't find McEwen in Saskatoon. I'm sorry, that's a shitty Scottish accent. And McEwen, by the way, McEwen, put a spoon in a glass of in a mug of McEwen, it will stand. Okay, that's what kind of beer it is. I have it once a year when I went to Saskatoon for Folk Fest. And I would always go to the Saskatchewan, the Folk Festival. Folk Fest, which is a big multicultural thing. Mm-hmm. And I always go to the Scottish Pavilion and have a McEwen's. And I couldn't do it one year. I'm like, my whole trip is ruined. I can't have a McEwen's.
Because
the whole trade war
wars.
Thing. It's just politics. It's silly. Silly politics. Anyway, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, so would you like me to read some stuff from the...
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just going to read one from Pologia, a.k.a. Okay. Paul Enns, directed to you, Robert. In the U.S., in the U.S., anyone can sell a book with dangerous claims as long as they don't sell the dangerous product, and anyone can sell the dangerous product as long as they don't make a health claim. Is Canada the same?
I believe
so. No.
Robert.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I agree with the statement itself. Selling dangerous products.
As in
order you hope that they're regulated so that it doesn't happen. Of course, sometimes things fall through the cracks. Raw milk is a perfect example. There are places where raw milk is still allowed to be sold, and it kills people. It just kills people. I mean, before pasteurization, it was known as white death. That's what milk was known as. It killed many people, and it still kills people today. Yet, in certain jurisdictions, raw milk is allowed to be sold. I'd like to believe that...
But they can't sell it with the health claim that it's better than regular. Like, they can't make that claim on the milk, but they can make that claim online to sell you the milk.
Yeah, the advertising, as I said before... There's a lot of loopholes in advertising, but fortunately, regulators on both sides of the border, U.S. and Canada, are starting to look at those health claims or insinuations or implied benefits and with a much more discerning look than they have in the past. So hopefully we'll start to see a little bit more tightening up of those kind of things.
And the other posting is on YouTube, and it's quite the discussion. So I think we should just, I don't know. I know that one gentleman, Nico, had said that he had to leave or something like that. I think he's still online. But anyway, I think he'd like to see us address these questions in the future. So.
Well, one of the things is that he cited a paper called The Metabolism of Glyphosate in Sprague Dolly Rats. And, of course, we already talked about Sprague Dolly Rats and why it's not a good idea to use Sprague Dolly Rats like Seralini did. The number of rats per group. Okay.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Okay, so while Seralini used 10 rats per group, the power of that number is... abysmal in terms of drawing conclusions from. I don't know. Can you speak to this, Rob, about the Ridley and Merley paper?
Are you aware of it? I'm not sure which paper that is.
Neither am I. It's called The Metabolism of Glyphosate in Sprague Dolly Rats, but I don't know what journal. That makes a difference. Because that's a way, that's how you look up a paper. let me look on PubMed. Just let me go offline here for a second.
Again, Sprague Dolly Rats is a problem.
Yeah, they're specifically designed to generate tumors. So it's not a surprise that when you grow them for 2 years, their life expectancy, they have tumors.
And I think the reason why was because they were going to use those rats in cancer research, so they wanted the tumor so that they could test cancer drugs or something.
You know, Seralini and group have made so many different claims about their paper now. I've lost track what their latest one is. They've said it's not a toxicology paper, or it's not a cancer paper, or it's not this, or it's not that. Simply lost track.
I have no idea what it would be then. That would be at all relevant.
Yeah.
Stay away from dubious sources, people. Seralini or those rats? Come on. Start thinking about it.
Well, sorry, Nico. I cannot find any reference to this paper in PubMed.
So, yeah.
There
again,
you go. Done.
People... Post Sorry. A link or something.
Yeah, post a link to the PDF if you can. If not, give me a PubMed reference. I can find no reference whatsoever.
I'm sorry.
And of course, then we already have the aforementioned Sprague Dolly issue. The number of animals that you need to use to get any statistical significance goes up in Sprague Dollies relative to any other, pretty much any other. It would be like using BB rats to study how a compound creates diabetic rats. BB rats are diabetic.
Yeah, these rats
they're bred that way. You know, it matters. Yeah, the strain of rat matters, and if you're using Sprague Dollies in a study that involves looking at cancer. Sorry, pretty bad. But I don't even know what journal it was published in, so I haven't got a clue. I can't find any reference to a Ridley or a Merley.
And he didn't post it, so next time you better post it. I think we're done here because he didn't even...
Yeah, I don't see anything. I get zero search results, so I can't say anything. I can't speak to it. And so that's enough said. Yeah. Not a proper citation. But again, if it's got Sprague-Dawley in it and you're talking about cancer, come on.
It's good.
They already used the wrong strain.
It's like complaining that humans have nose hair.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we've kind of covered all the bases here. And anybody wants to follow you on Twitter, they can find you. Your handle is RobertWager1.
That's correct.
And you have a website.
Yeah, it's just robertwager.com. And somehow I managed to, actually my son who built my computer page, he built it and he was able to secure that name. So it's just robertwager.com. And there you'll find a lot of the articles I've written that are really geared toward the average person. So I try and eliminate the jargon and explain what the science has found. Sort of demystify it. And then along the way, there's a lot of debunking of the myths. And then there's lots of links to other reputable sources where you can get information from. And if you ever have a question, just email me at robert.wager@viu.ca, where I work at Vancouver Island University, and I answer all questions.
You've got to write a book on this.
And you're not an owner of GMOs, and you don't have GMO seeds, and you don't have a stake in the GMO industry.
Yeah.
No.
That there on GMO Answers. No, it says right on GMO Answers that he doesn't have a stake in this. He's just simply somebody who knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I teach biochemistry and molecular biology. It's my area of training, and I got involved with this. Oh, geez, almost 20 years ago when I read a fabulous book, and I really recommend everybody should read it. It's Pandora's Picnic Basket by Alan Ewan. A wonderful book. And that got me started in this whole thing, and who knew that I would become a spokesperson for the science, not the companies, the science of genetic engineering, and where can be very beneficial. We've got some very serious problems coming in the next 20 or 30 years. Oh. Huge pressures.
I wanted to ask you this because there's the potassium crisis. Is that a real thing or is that?
Phosphorus.
Phosphorus, yeah. Oh, no. No, is it phosphorus?
It's a real thing. It's interesting. One of the best things I've seen in the last couple of years is, I think it's out of Northern Europe where they're actually mining the phosphorus out of human waste to recycle it.
Holy crap.
And I think, what a good idea. What a good idea. It is. It actually is a real thing. We.
It's not a job I want.
Astronauts recycle their water up in space too. So
that's true.
You've got to trust the science on that one.
But they don't have to actually, you know, it's not like in The Martian where you had to actually pull everything apart. I hope. That would really suck.
I don't know what their systems are up there, but I know that they do recycle that stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Especially water. Anything to do with water has to be recycled.
Water is water. Phosphorus is phosphorus in the end. Salt is salt.
Yeah, but he's right. There is a concern about scarcity of phosphorus. It's an essential component of fertilizers. Maybe we'll have as much luck with phosphorus transport mechanisms and engineering more efficiency there as we are beginning to have with nitrogen efficiencies in crops. So we're engineering crops so that you need less nitrogen in order to get the same yield. Now, that's really fascinating stuff. And maybe it wouldn't surprise me at all that we find similar ways to tweak the DNA of our food crops so that we need less phosphorus as well.
Cammie Ryan just sent a link here. Or not a link, but a... I have a hairless... Yes, I do have a hairless cat. It's a sphinx. Yes, he's a pink little piggy. Oh, you got one too. Oh, cool. Yeah, he's a pink little piggy. He's got the markings of a pig. Yeah. Anyway, this was a Monsanto thing. I can't speak to this because I have no idea what it says. It's from Monsanto Environmental Health Laboratory. And it was submitted to the WHO. It's not really peer reviewed, but well.
Cammie's also a fellow science communicator along these lines with GMOs and such too. So.
Yeah. So maybe she could speak on that at some point. It's an unpublished report. Well, there we go. We have no. We can't speak to any report that's not published. We just can't. I mean, you have to. That's the thing. Science is hard in the sense that you just can't cite somebody. You have to actually look at their experimental design, the statistics that they used to draw their conclusions. You have to look at their actual... Yeah, I can't look at it at an unpublished report to assess it. And that's why it's not very amenable to debating anybody. Science is very difficult that way because it takes time to actually, okay, you cited that report. Well, I got to take a look at that. I'll get back to you in a week. It doesn't work in debates very well.
I wish they were designated.
So I have no idea what it says.
Report on science that were somewhat scientifically literate, but
maybe
journalism, you can't control that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Debates. Yeah. This is why we don't do science by public debate. In the sense of when Ken Ham was debating, he had a book.
Bill Nye. Yeah.
Well, he had one book, which was definitely not pre-reviewed. So I can't speak to it. What can I say?
Robert, do you know Cammie?
Cammie, yes.
Oh, he definitely knows. That's how we got connected, was through Cammie Ryan.
Oh, thank you, Cammie.
Yes, thank you, Cammie. Yes, definitely. Yeah. Okay, I think we're going to...
I have a silly question.
Go ahead.
Robert, have you seen a video by Cult of Dusty called I Fucking Love Monsanto? I know you know this one, Twyla.
Some of the information for me was used on it. They didn't get credit though, the bums.
I know who Dusty is, but I haven't, I don't know the particular.
Oh, God, this is from like a few years back now, hey? Mm. Yeah.
Oh, he's like.
Sorry,
I'll post it. Say for work language. It's awesome. If you send me a link,
I can play it.
Oh, it's about 5 years ago. Yeah. You should actually include that with this.
Yeah. Do you want me to put it on now?
Sure, we could. Send the link to me and I'll put it on full screen, and that's what we can use as an outro.
Dusty is feisty.
Yeah, I don't agree with all the things he says, but to each their own. Send me the link and I will.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
But yeah, he's like, you made me defend Monsanto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Monsanto doesn't exist.
Oh, and by the way,
not anymore.
Single reports, single citations are no good. Something has to be repeated before we should start attaching great confidence to it, to a conclusion. By the way, that's just another thing. Even better is something like. Sorry, go ahead.
One thing you missed out there, very important. The controls.
It's controlled. Yeah. And what constitutes a control too? Because there's a difference between naive and control, right? You only have. I've seen so many papers that have not got proper controls. It just boggles my mind.
Like homeopathic.
I remember that case of. of acupuncture and lazy eye, which is a bizarre thing. It was a terrible thing because how do you control? Well, you can control for that. It's difficult. They didn't do it right. But you can control for that. You can actually do it in a double or double or even triple blind fashion if you have the right, you know, you have acupuncture devices, which even the practitioner doesn't know whether or not they're applying a needle. Some clever budgie at Harvard actually came up with that. Control. What constitutes control is very, it can be very dicey. I'm just thinking of some
of the heart and soul of a good experiment.
Absolutely, though. Yeah. And sometimes you can't actually have a control. It's not possible. When I'm thinking of human assessing treatments for humans, you can't do it. You can't withhold a standard of care. It's because of medical ethics that you cannot. If there's already a treatment for something, you can't withhold it. You have to do...
Or the universe. Yeah. We only have one universe to discuss. We don't have a comparative universe to study, right?
Well, that's true, too. Not, yeah. In terms of...
empirically.
Well, we only have one example of life coming from non-life. That's this planet. Yeah. That's it. Unless you're a pan... what do you call them? Panspermia. Panspermian? Is that the correct term? I don't know. I've never actually called someone that. Panspermia is the...
rude.
It is. It does sound rather rude. Panspermia is the actual term. But yeah. Someone who believes in panspermia must be a panspermian. Okay. Whatever. Anyway. Did you send me the link?
I did.
You did.
It's in the Skype. Yeah.
Okay. Let me grab it here and I will play that.
It's just a good example. It's 16
minutes long. But
it's what? Actually, oh, no, we're not going to play 16 minutes long. Come on, Mark.
No, well, that's, you know, it's a little more nuanced and thoughtful than, you know, just a quick soundbite, but, you know, still condenses things really well, and it's worth people watching, you know.
Okay.
And it's got a lot of visuals.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
put it on the Facebook page.
There you go. He's wonderfully ranty. Yeah. It's very entertaining.
Yeah, he's an angry atheist. But... It's kind of like me. I like being angry. That's just the thing. It's not because I'm an atheist that I'm angry. It's just I like being angry.
And that part about Googling, when you're Googling information and you add the word skeptic, you're more likely to get the...
Oh, that word is so badly used.
That was my idea.
I just got to do that.
Anyway. We've almost been 2 hours here. I think it's time to sign off and have a I'm out of wine, first of all. So time to go.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rob, for being our guest, and we should have you on. Yeah, we'd love to have you on some other time and as a guest co-host to talk about the usual things that we talk about. It's not always skepticism in the scientific sense, just application to society. And we have a lot of fun. Cammy knows about that. And great.
It's this whole subject, the reality is GE technology will be part of our food future.
Of course.
How much is questionable. If the science directs it alone, it will be a fair amount. If the politics direct it alone, it will be less. But we won't be able to feed more people more sustainably without using this technology.
And this technology is tested and safer than mutation. I mean, you can't really quantify that, but it's at least as safe as mutation breeding. So come on. No more double standards.
We can all just eat salt.
DNA.
Drink a whole bunch of water.
Yeah. No, I just take you sitting there munching on a piece of Himalayan salt. You don't be crystal. Anyway, thanks again. And I think we're going to sign off now. So we're going to hit the closing button. Thanks a lot. Bye. Sweet. Okay, we're off.
Are we off?
We're off.
Okay.
Yeah.
We totally jacked our guest.
Good. Yeah. Hey.
But it's such a fun topic. Oh my God. It's fun. Yeah. And he's so awesome. He just kind of laughs at us. It's wonderful.
If you guys get a chance, you should watch, type in Roundup for Breakfast, No Ideas Media.
No Ideas Roundup for Breakfast?
Yeah.
Do we want to share that on our page too, maybe?
Yeah, sure.
It's really, Nick Sakes did this, and it is wonderful context, giving 15 or 10 minute video on, my dog just came to say hello, on the environmental working groups, Roundup for Breakfast. It's great. It's awesome. You'll love it.
Good.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone that can take apart the other guys. Thank you.
Yeah.
Is it, I'm sorry, Roundup for Breakfast? What was the other thing you said there?
It's part of No Ideas Media. So KNOW Ideas Media.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense.
And he does a lot of videos. This one is just dynamite.
Cool. Okay. Thanks. I'm going to go find
That's
that.
A quick, short one too, yeah. 8 minutes.
Yeah, it's short.
Yeah. We'll post that on our, I'll post those things too.
Okay, folks, well, I'm going to carry off and do some other stuff now.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go to bed.
It was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks. Right, yeah, we'll have you on again at some point. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Please. Talk about the left.
Roundup for dinner. I'm sure that's coming soon.
do you have any...
Who wants to make bets?
Do you have any people out in Vancouver Island University that are making leftist waves? Like, I don't know, Antifa, that kind of thing? Or is it reasonable out there?
That's pretty reasonable still. You know, you have your standard, we call it Lotus Land out here for a reason. You know, you've got a large back to nature contingent. You've got organic is a big thing out here. But by and large, people are pretty reasonable. We don't have the extremes that we're seeing in other parts of North America right now, which is nice. Nobody needs that. So.
No. Yeah, I think it's starting to subside now.
I hope so.
Evergreen State University or college is down 50% in terms of their enrollment.
Surprise, surprise.
It's just going down and down and down. It was one of the worst... it's probably the worst in the U.S. and it's way down there in lots of trouble.
Good.
Yeah, well, good in the way. The thing is, they still have the same president. I don't get it. I do not understand it. This guy is just a panders to this alt left. Just amazes me.
I'd like to see how much like alumni support in terms of funding they're getting versus.
Oh, I bet you that's down too. Mizu was down too. I don't know about now, but they were down to 30% or something like that. Mm. Well, that was another problem area. Yeah, it's been bad. It's bad enough in University of Calgary. Pretty bad, but not anywhere near that level.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I'm off to bed. This new thing.
It was fun.
Man, this is just freaking cool.
I had no idea that you could like run Facebook and YouTube comments on that thing.
Yeah,
but
well,
the Facebook
I couldn't
comments
before.
Weren't showing up anyway. But
they weren't. Yeah,
the YouTube ones were.
Yeah, they were. It's kind of. It doesn't. I'll fix that because it wasn't keeping the connection. So I would have to update whenever I went to that particular page. I'll see what I can do about keeping it in memory so that it displays them. I think I know how to do it without displaying them.
Yeah, okay, I see what
them.
You mean. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have to reconnect to YouTube and Facebook, and that was a problem.
Okay. Yeah.
But this Stream Deck is just everything. Just, it's awesome.
Okay, guys, I got to go.
Okay, good night. Thank you.
Thanks.
Dan.
Thank you. I'll see you. See everybody. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Legion of Reason Diversion coming to you from Alberta, Canada. If you enjoyed this episode, consider subscribing to our bi-weekly podcast on iTunes and other podcatchers. Even better, subscribe to our YouTube live sessions where you can join in on the discussion. Thanks for giving us a listen. Music and other sound effects under license from audioblocks.com.